kept thinking there was something I was going to do when I was doing the PowerPoint yesterday, and it was make that font not so big. And I didn't remember to do it, so it's still big. It's good to see everyone out this morning. It's good to see Casey and Bree back. I don't even know. It's probably been since mid-March, hadn't it? And so it's good to have them back with us as well. We're going to just keep trucking along here with John. In a book called Life at Home in the 21st Century, it was wrote back in 2012, they researched how families, middle-class families in the Los Angeles area, spent their time. They had noted that a lot of construction companies were building new houses, and even people who were remodeling that were adding on and fixing up their houses, that they paid a lot of attention to the backyard. They were adding new things, better things, adding pools and furniture and gazebos, all kinds of great stuff in the backyard so they could spend time with each other as a family in the backyard. In fact, these families talked to the researchers. They said that we spend a lot of time in our backyards. But the researchers, over a period of time, observed the families and where and how they spent most of their time. And in spite of the families that said that they spent a lot of times in their backyards, the researchers noted that on average, the children were only in the backyard about 40 minutes a week. And the adults were in the backyard about 15 minutes a week on average. And that's interesting, isn't it? That the researchers noted that although we think we spend a lot of time together as a family, although we'd like to spend a lot of time together as a family, and we may even invest a lot of money in spending time together as a family, a lot of times we just don't. And we can probably all relate to that. That we just don't spend as much time as we'd like just being with your family, talking with your family, eating with your family, sharing with your family. We get busy and we go 100 different directions, and I got to thinking about that, and if that is true of our immediate family, that husbands not spending as much time with their wives as they'd like and should, and parents not spending as much time with their kids as they know they should, and if that's true with our immediate families, how much more is that true of our church family? Now pre-COVID, how much time did you spend with other people that congregate in this room? In a given week, how much time did you spend together? Currently, how often do you call someone and ask how they are doing, or send a text and ask how they are doing? And here's something I want us to think about this morning, that today, that Sunday morning, it should be setting ourselves up for the whole week. This time that we come together, that we meet together, that we sing together, this time that we set apart, it should set the stage for the rest of the week. And it should do that in a lot of different ways. In our focus, we want to focus on Jesus. And so when we come together and we talk about Jesus and we sing about Jesus and we eat the bread and we drink the cup remembering Jesus, we are setting the stage for the entire week. I'm going to think about Jesus this week. I'm going to be a follower of Jesus this week. I'm going to set my whole life to revolve around Jesus this week. It's about family, but it's also about community. And when we come together in this room on Sundays and we sing about and we talk about and we think about and we read about how we ought to be loving each other, that too ought to set the stage for the week ahead, where we say, I'm going to make this a priority. It's important that we spend time together worshiping together, but it's also important that we get to know each other. And you may not ever be able to know everybody, but you need to know some people really well. And you need to allow some people to know you really well. It's this intimate time together. We eat together. We share a meal, and I realize it's just a pinch and a thimbleful, but it's a meal, and it's intimate because we are taking real food and drink, and we are sharing it together. And that ought to set the stage for the things we do throughout the week. I'm no song leader, but we are here singing together. And it's intimate to allow someone to hear you singing. But that's what we are here doing together, listening to and hearing each other and allowing ourselves to be heard, singing these songs together, sharing our hearts with each other. That ought to set the stage for the week. Sunday mornings shapes our week, but it also should shape our lives. Yes, to focus on God. Yes, to focus on Jesus. Yes, to dig into the scriptures, but also to spend time together as a family. And as we go throughout our week, if we start it this way, maybe we will begin to think, I need to make more time for my brothers and sisters. The text we've been looking at last week and this week and will again next week is from John chapter 13, and it's the Last Supper. And again, breaking bread. And really, that scene that we probably have in our heads, maybe that painting by Da Vinci where the apostles are sitting on either side of Jesus around a table, but that's not really an accurate portrayal. That's not how they ate at that time and place. They didn't eat sitting around long tables. They were reclining, and they were propped up on one elbow around the table. And again, it's an incredibly intimate time. Jesus had just washed their feet. They were eating and drinking and talking. They were sharing. And this is what community looks like. This is what family is supposed to look like. This is what church is supposed to look like. This is what Jesus was setting up and establishing. This kind of brotherly relationship. And he's telling them to love each other, to serve each other, wash each other's feet. And it's a beautiful, harmonious moment, but there is a snake in the garden. There is a snake in the midst of the love and the service and the self-sacrifice. And in the midst of all this, do this for one another, there is a snake in the garden, and his name is Judas. And John has been hinting all along that Judas was going to betray Jesus. And we'll just look at a few verses that we've already looked at as we went through John. And in John chapter 6, beginning in verse 70, Jesus answered them and said, "Did I not choose you, the 12? And yet one of you is a devil." And he spoke of Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he, one of the 12, was going to betray him. And then in John chapter 12, we read of the time where Mary is pouring perfume on Jesus. And beginning in verse 3, it says, "Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, who was about to betray him, said, 'Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?' He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus said, 'Leave her alone, so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you always have with you, but you do not always have me.'" And sometimes, just picture that scene in the upper room of that Last Supper, and Judas and the other 11, and Jesus lying there at the table. And again, they're eating and drinking, sharing. I'm sure they are laughing, just being brothers. And Jesus knowing that one of them, Judas, was a snake in the garden, and that he was going to betray Jesus. And that's how we often think about Judas is betraying Jesus. But Judas also betrayed the other 11. And these were men that he traveled with. And you know, if you've ever traveled with someone, what? You either really love them or you really don't, right? And that's just in a car. These guys were walking and walking and walking for something like 3 years, taking meals together, sharing everything. But instead of laying down his life for his brothers, Judas was selling them out. Instead of washing his brother's feet, he was stealing from them. He was a thief and a liar and a betrayer, and he was betraying the family that Jesus was setting up. So let's look at the text from today, John chapter 13, beginning in verse 27. Jesus is handing the morsel to Judas after he being Jesus, had taken the morsel. Satan entered to him being Judas. And Jesus said to him, "What you are going to do, do quickly." Now no one at the table knew why he said this to him. Some thought because Judas had the money bag. Jesus was telling him, "Buy what we need for the feast," or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel of bread, he immediately went out, and it was night. And again, if you've been reading through John or John's epistles, you know that John loves contrast. He loves to draw stark contrast. He loves light and dark imagery, day and night, good and evil. He's drawing a contrast here, love and hate, devotion and betrayal, service, and selfishness. Judas's betrayal here is in stark contrast with the type of love that Jesus is not only demonstrating, but is commanding of his followers. And I think, and especially because we're going to look at 1 John in a moment, that John wants us, the readers, to examine ourselves, to ask ourselves, which one are you? Are you someone who follows the commandments and examples of Jesus to selflessly love and to give yourself up for your brothers? Or do you hate your brothers? And you say, it's not that easy. It's not that black and white. It's not that stark of a contrast. But John wants us to look at it that way and ask those questions. And we have to. We have to examine ourselves in that light. Do I love my brothers or do I hate them? Am I laying down my life for my brothers, or am I just looking out for number one? Am I washing their feet, or am I robbing them blind? Verse 31 says, when he had gone out, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. And it strikes me the similarity between the next few chapters, especially right here in John chapter 13 and the Great Commission of Matthew chapter 28. In Matthew chapter 28, Jesus says that all authority in heaven and earth have been given to me. Go and make disciples of all nations, right? That's what he said. He's talking about here how God is going to glorify him, which in essence means he is going to give him authority. All authority on heaven and earth is given to Jesus. He is glorified in the Father, and the Father is going to glorify him. And so there's the authority. But here in John's account, instead of saying go and make disciples, he just says go and love one another. Verse 34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you, you are also to love one another. By this, by this radical, this otherworldly, this supernatural, atypical love that my followers have for each other, by this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. Jesus is setting up this new kind of humanity, this new kind of community, one where two members of the community aren't just partners, they're family. One where two members of the community don't just work together, but they love each other. And look at what he says there. Love one another how? As I have loved you. You mean washing each other's feet, right? Well, yeah, I guess what he has just demonstrated, but what he is about to demonstrate with the cross. Love one another that way. Do you see the contrast with Judas? John is telling the story, and the apostles don't know that Judas is going to betray Jesus. They don't know that he has left for that purpose, but that's what's happening, and John is helping us to see that contrast. That you are either a Judas or you are walking like Jesus wants you to walk. You are either betraying the community and family by not loving them, or you are loving them as Jesus told you to love them. Well, let's look over to 1 John chapter 3 and verse 11. I think it's a great commentary of what we're reading here in the book of John. Beginning in verse 11 there, 1 John chapter 3, John says, for this is the message you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. We should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. But and why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brothers were righteous. And here's where we want a lot of gray area, don't we? We're kind of like, come on, John. We can say either I love like Jesus or I'm Cain who killed his own brother. I'm either a murderer or a lover. I either love or I hate. There has to be some sort of gray area in there, but John wants us to see that as a stark contrast. He wants us to see it that way so that we really examine ourselves and we have that moment of truth where we say, which way are you going to go? It doesn't mean that we are going to love perfectly, but you have to decide, which way will you live? To what kind of lifestyle will you be committed? A lifestyle where everybody else who loves them loves those people back? You'll remember what Jesus said. You love those who love you. Big deal. Everybody does that. Everybody loves the people that love them. Everybody loves the people that are easy to love. Everybody loves the people that are easy to get along with. Everybody loves like that. But Jesus is saying, I'm calling you to love like me. To wash the feet of the men that you know are going to betray you and stab you in the back. I'm calling you to lay down your life for one another, and John wants us to see that you've got to choose one lifestyle or another. Verse 13, he says, don't be surprised, brothers, that the world hates you. We know that we have passed out of death into life because we love the brothers. Whoever does not love abides in death. Whoever does not love still remains in death. You know you've been changed. You know you've been converted. You know you've been transformed. You know something is happening to you. And not like a warm, tingling feeling in your heart. I mean, that's great. I love those feelings. But it's whether or not you love. And love here is not so much a feeling as it is an action, behavior. For John, and all throughout his book and the epistles here, John would say things like there are two things. Believe in Jesus and love the brothers. Stop living like you are living and love the brothers and believe in Jesus. That's it. Confess that Jesus has come in the flesh and love the brothers. It's that simple. Jesus himself would say it's two things. Love God and love your neighbor. And love is hard sometimes. It's easy to come across that we're loving. It's easy to give the illusion of being loving. It's easy to post something on Facebook that says love your neighbor, but it's really hard to love the people that are hard to get along with. John says everyone who hates his brother is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. Again, I know it's a stark contrast, but that's how John wants us to see it. You've got to decide, love and life or hate and death. Which way will you go, love and life or hate and death? You have to decide. And in verse 16, he says, by this we know love, that he laid down his life for us. And we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers, but if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does God's love abide in him? Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and truth. And I want us this morning to ask ourselves the question, how do we love as Jesus loved? Especially looking at verses 17 and 18. I think three things we can draw from that real quick. Number one is he laid down his life for us, so we ought to lay down our lives for the brothers. So what does that mean to love like Jesus loved? Well, it means that we lay down our lives for each other. Paul put it like that last week. We looked at last week in Philippians chapter 2. He says to consider others to be more significant than yourselves. Consider others to be your superior so that you not only look out for yourself, but that you look out for the interest of others. Again, it's normal to look out for your own interest. It's normal. It's average. It's ordinary. There could be maybe nothing more ordinary in this world than a person taking care of themselves. If you're hungry, you go and fix yourself something to eat. If you're cold, you wrap a blanket around yourself. If you're lonely, you go and find somebody to spend time with. And Jesus teaches us to get outside of our own head and love other people that way. Love them as you would love yourself. Do for them what you wish somebody would do for you. In fact, so much so that you're willing to lay down your life for them. But here's the thing. It's really easy to say things like, I'd take a bullet for that guy. Or I love that guy so much I'd swap my life for his in a heartbeat. Yeah, great, wonderful. But would you live for him? It's one thing to say, I'd lay down my life for that person, but if you won't even go have a cup of coffee with them, would you really lay down your life for them? If you won't make time for them, and I know that we are incredibly busy people, but we make time for things that are a priority for us, don't we? How much Netflix do we watch? How much time do we spend on social media? How many books have we read? How much time do we spend with our brothers and sisters in Christ? When Jesus loved us, he didn't just give his life. I mean, it wasn't that he just came down, gave his life, and he went back up. He came down and he spent 33 years with us. He dwelt with us and he laid down his life for us, and Jesus calls us to imitate that love. And then John says, if anyone has the world's goods and yet closes his heart to his brother, so what's the opposite of closing your heart? It's opening your heart, right? So that's number two. We have to open our hearts. We have to lay down our lives. We have to open our hearts. And think about what it means to close your heart. You see somebody in need and you say, I don't care. That's not my problem. That's your problem. I could help you, but I'm not going to. And so you close your heart. It means I'm not going to feel. I'm not going to feel anything towards that anymore. I'm going to be apathetic, and we can be like that a lot of times, can't we? Life has a way of sort of making us apathetic, sort of calloused, sort of skeptical, and say, I just really don't care anymore. I can't feel anything towards that anymore. And we just close our hearts after a while. And Jesus invites us to a lifestyle where we open our hearts to each other, where we say, I'm willing to care about your problems. I'm willing to feel about your problems the way that I feel about my problems. Now, we can't literally do that for the whole world, but we certainly can do that for the dozen or so people that are within our reach in our real lives, can't we? We could be part of a group of people that are actively, intentionally opening up our hearts to each other, letting each other know what's going on in our lives and the problems that we have and are struggling with, because that can be hard too sometimes, can't it? To open up our hearts that way and let people in and let people know what's going on with you, but also to let their problems into your life and care about their problems the way that you care about yours, and you take on your burdens the way that you've taken on your own burdens, or their burdens the way you take on your own burdens, because that's what Paul says, doesn't he? To bear each other's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And lastly, number three, love in deed and truth. And remember what we've been saying about the word truth in the book of John. It's reality versus illusion. It's easy to give the illusion of being loving. To say, oh, I love you so much, be warm and well fed. Hey, you have a problem? Well, your problem is on my heart. I'll be praying for you. I'll be praying about you. I care about you. I really do. And I mean, it's easy to say those kinds of things, isn't it? But John tells us that's not enough. To say that you care, to say that you love, that's not enough. You have to love in deed and truth. You have to love in reality. Sometimes that means washing each other's feet. Sometimes that means rolling up your sleeves and getting dirty. Sometimes that looks like feeding someone. It looks like all sorts of different things. Love in deed and in truth. One of our situations in the world we live in isn't that we don't want to so much. It's that we've just retreated so much into our own bubbles that we don't even know what's going on in each other's lives. If we're going to care for each other and love each other and help each other and serve each other and lay down our lives for one another and open our hearts and love and deed and truth, then we have to be willing to spend time with one another. So, moment of truth question this morning. What if everyone here loved the church exactly the way that you love the church? And some of us may say, great. Some of us may say, not so much. What if everyone was as generous with the church as you are? What if everyone was as devoted to the church family as you are? What if everyone spent as much time with the church family as you do? And for some of us, that's like, keep going. Keep doing what you are doing. And for some of us, we look at that question and we say, I should be doing more. If everybody loved the church the way I love the church, we would be in pretty bad shape. Some of us may look at that and say, I'm not really doing anything to love the church. If everybody loved the church the way I love the church, the church would just fall apart. Jesus invites us into a lifestyle where we love one another as he has loved us. And again, it's hard. But I promise that the benefits are unbelievable. To be part of a family that would lay down their life for you, to be part of a family who would give anything for you, to be part of a family who loves you the way that they love themselves, who will do for you what they will do for themselves. When you're hungry, they want to feed you. When you're cold, they want to wrap a blanket around you. You can't put a price on that kind of lifestyle. You can't put a price on that type of life. And that's the type of life that Jesus invites us to, into a community where everyone loves like that, into a community where everyone cares like that, into a community where everyone is devoted like that. And you say, Mike, that's not realistic. Not everyone is going to do that, and that's true. Maybe, probably. But you can, right? You are the only person you can control. you can love like that. You can accept Jesus' invitation to love one another as he has loved you. It starts at baptism. And then it's a daily thing where we say, I'm going to take up my cross and I'm going to follow Jesus. I will love my brothers and sisters as Jesus has loved me, because by this people will know that we are his followers if we have love for one another. So maybe there's someone here this morning that is ready to accept Jesus' invitation and be baptized into him. Or you may find yourselves in need of prayer from the congregation. Now would be an opportune time as together we stand and we sing.